find that I have gone.
Welcome back. This is Dr. K. Whitehead in for Mark Steiner here on The Mark Steiner Show. Today we're talking about the upcoming presidential race, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner or at K. Whitehead, that's K-A-Y-E Whitehead, or visit us on our Facebook page. But before we get to that, we want to acknowledge what happened in Charleston, South Carolina last night. A white gunman, and the FBI just released his name, Dylan Storm Ruth, opened fire during a prayer service at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church. The congregation was established in 1816. The church was built in 1891, and it is one of the oldest African-American churches in America. This church has been a major hub of civil rights activity. It includes the 1969 protest led by Coretta Scott King, where she faced down about 1,500 gunmen. 9 people have died, including the pastor, Reverend Clementa Pinckney, who also serves as a South Carolina state senator. This is being investigated as a hate crime, and our thoughts and prayers are with the families. Now, on Monday, join us here on the Steiner Show, because we're going to talk about Charleston and the tenuous state of race relations and the question of where do we go from here, but we do want to discuss it just for a moment. The New York Times just reported that the pastor's cousin said that the shooter said before the shots were fired, quote, "I have to do it. You rape our women, and you are taking over our country, and you have to go," unquote. We want to get comments about this from Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television, and Dr. Richard Vatz, professor of rhetoric and communication at Towson University's Department of Instructional Leadership and Professional Development. He also had a piece in the Baltimore Sun last week titled Rand Paul's Personality Predicament. Gentlemen, I have to do it. You rape our women, and you're trying to take over our country, and you have to go. Charles, what do you think?
Well, obviously, this is a person who has some mental issues, and obviously, it comes in the wake of some very tense moments in Charleston, South Carolina, where a police officer shot a black man who was running away from a scene, mm-hmm. and who was summarily dismissed because of his inability to accurately portray what he did. But this also, one of the other things, I'm watching some Twitter traffic. There was some gunshots in Memphis as well at another church. I hope this is not a trend.
I hope it's not the start of a trend.
Right. But they have posted new pictures of the suspect. By all appearances, he looks normal. But, you know, obviously something set him off that he felt as though by going to this church's prayer meeting. And you know, I think most black folks will tell you, you know, prayer meetings go on all the time,
right.
You know, in all kinds of congregations. And the thing is, those are kind of like safe refuges for folk who have like thoughts, like minds, and want to share, if they will, in the Word of God. And to have someone to kind of disrupt that, you know, that it disrupts the sanctimony of that hallowed space for those who are true believers, if you will.
So we want to turn to Richard. I mean, we think about the black church as this place where it is a safe haven. I mean, not taking into account the bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church. I mean, we did have churches being bombed and being targeted during the civil rights movement, but there's a piece of us that feels that we have moved beyond that. Charles said something set him off. He said, "I have to do it. You rape our women, and you're taking over our country, and you have to go." That doesn't seem to be much clearer to me about what set him off.
Well, I do not find this murder interesting. And I agree with Charles and everything he said except one thing. And he said he has mental issues. And that's what, if this guy is caught and he's tried, that's what the defense will claim. They'll probably claim an insanity plea. And I don't think he's insane at all. I think he's evil. We've got to bring the word evil back into our vocabulary. And also, one of the things that strikes me about this is that this was in South Carolina, which has the death penalty.
Yes.
And this guy, whoever did this, should be executed. And, you know, if he did this in Maryland and we could not, and it wasn't made a federal crime, a hate crime, you know, he couldn't be executed because we don't have the death penalty. So I think that this is a case in which it's in South Carolina. He ought to be executed if he's found guilty and not found guilty by reason of insanity. And so I think if I could put one word in your audience's vocabulary to use over and over again, it's evil. This is an evil person who did this.
Richard, I'd like to say I need to mark this moment in this time in history because I agree with you. So rarely agree on the air. I agree with you. This is premeditated. This is cold. You don't walk into a church with guns if you don't mean to do something with them.
Right.
South Carolina is a very tenuous place, from the Confederate flag being waved to Walter Scott to what's happening in the church. And this is a rabbit trail. I mean, the phones are lighting up. But this really is Monday's topic. But we just could not let the day go by without saying something, acknowledging that this is happening.
And let me add one thing you said about premeditation. This is a guy who, in law, you don't need much to establish premeditation. But this guy sat there for an hour and contemplated what he was going to do in addition to coming to the church to kill these people. And I would just like, if we could just spend another minute on this, I would just love to hear from any of your listeners who believe that this guy should get anything but execution.
I mean, it is pure evil.
Yes.
And I absolutely agree with that. Because he did sit in this church for an hour. People are praying. They're talking about their sins. They're atoning. There's all kind of communion going on within the church that's seen as a safe space.
Right.
And this is the place you come to disrupt. We're going to go to a caller, though. Let's go to Merrick. Merrick wants to just talk a little bit about what happens when white people commit crime. Merrick, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm calling because it seems like when white people commit this type of crime, people want to say, oh, this person was mentally ill, that we want to dig into their childhood and come up with psychiatric records. And at the end of the day, this person is a terrorist in a long line of white terrorists. This is not the first time this has happened in a black church in terms of acts of egregious racial terrorism. And we need to start using that word, because how many, and I'll leave your guests with this question. How many times and instances have black people been praying and then being murdered by racial terrorists? I mean, the state itself flies a flag of racial terror and traitors and rebellion. So I'm not understanding why we're always trying to frame this as some mental health issue when, in fact, truth be told, this is terrorism.
Thank you so much, Merrick. I mean, that's the idea. So when we add to our national dialogue this word evil that Richard put out, we also add the word terrorism. I mean, there's a stark image of black pastors getting down and praying during the civil rights movement. This idea that prayer is a sanctuary.
That's right. And it's to instill fear in people who previously were not engaged in that fearfully. Yeah.
Charles, do you want to make one final comment
A couple of little things. First and foremost, the FBI apparently was aware of this guy, and they have posted new pictures, one where he's standing in front of a forest with the apartheid-era insignia of the South African system in on his jacket. Obviously, you know, you can infer whatever you want from that, but obviously the term hate crime is not just used as a, you know, as a metaphor for, okay, whites against blacks, blacks against whites, or whatever. But I think we've all come to the conclusion, you know, this is premeditated, it appears, on his part, because obviously, you know, I do find it difficult. You're sitting there for an hour, you're listening, and if you still are intent on doing whatever you're going to do, that does lay the foundation for me. But I'm quite certain we're going to get a lot more information about this guy's background and what his motivations were, and whether or not, and as always, was he a lone actor? I think that's always the bigger case. And if this will spur others, if you will. And I'm always concerned of the copycats that might be out there who need that little thing to just to push them over the edge. But I think a lot will be learned. We don't even know all the names of the folks who have died yet. We know that the pastor who was a state senator in South Carolina.
They've covered his chair in black today.
Right.
Yeah.
And of course, the families there are affected. And that community, I mean, I think the mayor of South Carolina said you know, we'll be living with this long after this event is gone.
This is a tear in the fabric for South Carolina. But the point I just want to tap in that you just said about this idea of copycats, because there's a lot of research that talks about when these type of issues happen, that you have a number of people who look at it and then begin to respond. The shots that are supposedly being fired now down in Georgia, are we starting on this new trend where we go into these safe spaces and we allow our hatred to really rule? It's not as if we don't know what he said. We have his exact words. When you talk about blaming someone for rape, you blame someone for taking over your country. I mean, that gets to the heart of a debate we're having about who does the country belong to when people say things like, we want our country back. That's back from whom and
it's
back to where?
It's the hoary cliches of 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago and back. I mean, this, you know, I want to say just one subtle point. The examination of this guy's organizations and cohorts is perfectly appropriate. The examination of this individual I find to be utterly unremarkable. I mean, all kinds of media will try to examine this individual and try to find out the psychological roots and all that garbage. This is clear and simple a hater who decided to assassinate innocent people who were praying. And as I say, the only thing that bothers me is that in South Carolina, I hope that their appeal process doesn't make it too long before this fellow is caught and executed.
Well, I want to get to a couple of calls because people do want to talk about this, and we want to make the space available, and then we'll go to the political race after our first break. Kadria's on the line. Good morning. How are you?
Oh, I could be better. I'm glad to be here.
Thank you for joining us.
I want to get right into it. No one should be surprised because this is old hat. The caller is right. These people are terrorists. They are reserved terrorists in this country for people outside the country, namely Muslims. I need to tell everybody, listen, the first terrorist in the world was white and Christian, and they're called the Ku Klux Klan, and they're alive and well in America, parading around now in blue uniforms. Yes, they're going to delve into the background and make all kind of excuses, just like they did for the guy who bombed up, who killed up the kids in Connecticut, I believe. The other one who bombed up the children in the high schools and the college. They always make excuses because their behavior deserves excuses.
We don't have problems. We don't have the stress. We don't have nothing. Okay, thank you, Kadria. Richard, I know you wanted to comment.
I think that blue uniform business is a cheap shot, and I can understand it at the time of this kind of stress, but that's outrageous.
To just completely blame just one group rather than looking across the spectrum, because you don't take into account what happened in Virginia. You don't take into account what happened in Colorado. These were not blue suits. Some of them were college students. Some of them came from the community. That this type of sickness, and I'm not saying mental illness. I'm not saying that. I'm using this word sickness as a metaphor for the evil that you're talking about, the terrorism that you're talking about, the preying on people who are in a church or in a movie theater or sitting in a classroom at college. Or sitting in a classroom at high school. Like, this is a sickness that we have to deal with. We have Bill on the air. Bill, good morning. How are you?
Yes, how y'all doing?
We're doing well.
All, thank you. First of all, it's indoctrination. And, you know, secondly, I don't think that even when he left the church, I think it was somebody in the car that I think he wasn't by himself. I don't think that he's even smart enough to lose the police for 1 hour. Working by himself. I mean, it's indoctrination. And then another thing is this. As much hate in this country, unfortunately, since that President Obama been president, then it has only served racial hate more. Because, you just got some people just can't stand the thought of that black man and that black family and the leaders of this here country. What we say is the free country and the leader of the world.
Thank you so much, Bill. We really do appreciate your comment. Before we have our guest in the studio commenting, we have Dr. Lester Spence on the phone. Dr. Spence, did you want to chime in here?
Yeah.
Good morning.
Real quick. Hey, good morning. I was on the phone with a really, really good friend who's kind of a religious leader, and she was asking me to kind of make sense of it. And although we can't really... It's hard to make sense. Something like this puts us in kind of in flux in a way. What I suggested was that one of the things that we have to start doing in and outside of faith-based communities is really be clear that we are in a long-term, protracted political struggle.
Yes.
And if we articulate that, the responses we have to that are going to vary, right? Somebody, for example, in the church community is going to respond to that idea that we're in a protracted political struggle different from somebody who's maybe not in the church community. But what that does is it helps us understand individual acts of violence like this and the more systemic acts of violence that have been perpetuated in Baltimore and Detroit and other places like it. And it kind of – I don't believe that we're asleep. I don't want this to make it seem like we're all asleep, but it kind of helps wake people up and says, okay, these are the consequences. I mean, this is the game we're in, or this is the circumstances we've been dealt with. We're in a protracted political struggle. We're probably not going to win while we're alive, and we have to start really, really acting like it in as many spaces as possible.
Well, Dr. Spence, before we take you off the line, I just want to ask you one quick question. Uh-huh. So with all of that in mind, with the idea that we're in this long-term political battle, it's a battle, as you said, we're probably not going to be alive to see the victory.
Right.
Where do you think we go from here? Because we are on the ground with these things breaking every day.
So what that means for me is we have to move into like long-term political organizing.
Okay.
And organizing is different than mobilizing, right? Than mobilizing somebody for a mass meeting or a mass action. It's different than activism, right? Because there are a number of folks who are activists on the ground. Organizing is a different project, right? So in a place like Baltimore specifically, what we have to do is begin to organize communities to place specific demands on their elected officials and on the economic elites that think they run the city but don't.
Thank you so much, Dr. Spence. Charles, I want to turn to you. This idea of placing this pressure on our political leaders, which will, of course, lead us into our conversation after the break. How would you connect these two things?
Well, first of all, you know, I don't always equate crime with politics, but in some instances, you know, it speaks to a broader question of how civil our society may or may not be. And so I want to get to that issue. I think Dr. Spence is on to something in that, you know, you can use this as a catalyst.
Right.
But I don't think you can use it as a what I would call a motivational tool.
Okay.
Because it's important to separate crime sometimes from politics, mm-hmm. unless there's criminal activity in politics,
right.
if you will. But the other part of that is that, look, we will all try and shape what we have heard and seen about this event into our own prism of right and wrong and or justice or injustice. I always caution people, and I learned this the hard way working in Cincinnati. A guy came down. We had been up late one night, and they had a guy who claimed he shot a cop. And the guy came down, and he looked at me. He said, tell him to check the gun. And, you know, I was like, oh, this is a guy just trying to get out. Well, guess what? A week later, they found out it was friendly fire shooting.
Mm.
So I'm always cautious about whatever the initial matter of fact issues that go on with crime, because they never ever seem to turn out as how they are. So I want to caution our audience.
Mm-hmm.
You can be aggrieved for all the folks who have died, and I feel your pain, if you will,
mm-hmm.
but be, you know, step back for a minute and let the authorities do their job. If this person who has been charged with this crime has done these dastardly deeds, then I believe in the American justice system. It will take care of itself.
Okay, well, I want to have Richard make one quick comment, only because what we're talking about now, which is a different issue, is the ways in which the internet begins to push an issue forward before they can do their job. They're taking pictures of him. They're floating around. His comments are out there. Like, everything's happening, and we're actively involved in pushing this story. One last quick comment.
I just want to say that I agree with what Charles just said. And one thing I always tell my students, and I make this in reference to the call that you just got that you thought had some insight that I do not. Everything is not an example of everything else. And sometimes people, you know, anything happens, people say, boy, I tell you, the political issues here are just overwhelming. Well, what are they? I mean, this is not a political issue.
It's a crime.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a crime. It is
exactly.
A crime. I hate crime.
Exactly. Exactly. It's an awful crime, for, and I hate to be redundant, but for which, again, the perpetrator ought to be executed.
Well, we're going to leave it right there. If you just joined us, this is KY's Whitehead sitting in for Mark Steiner here on WEAA 88.9 FM. We're going to talk more about that issue on Monday, but after the break, we're talking about the upcoming presidential race. More from Charles Robinson and Richard Batts, and more from you. Call us at 410-319-8888. Tweet us at KWhitehead or leave us a note on our Facebook page. On our way to break, we're hearing Fats Domino's I Want to Walk You Home. That song was recorded today in 1950.
I love to hear you walk. I love to hear you talk. I'm on my way. I'm on my way.
Dr. KY's Whitehead in for Mark Steiner on The Mark Steiner Show. And that was one of my favorites. The Lion Sleeps Tonight by The Tokens. Hank Madress of The Tokens passed away today in 2007.
Oh, we my wacko.
Yes, love that. And I think that's the perfect song to talk about politics. The Lion Sleeps Tonight. So earlier this week, Jeb Bush officially entered the presidential race. He joins an already overcrowded field that includes, and I'll probably miss some of them, Ted Cruz, Hillary Clinton, Rand Paul, Marco Rubio, Ben Carson, Carly Fiorini, Mike Huckabee, Rick Perry, Lindsey Graham, George Pataki, Rick Santorum, Martin O'Malley, Bernie Sanders, and dare I say it, yes, even Donald Trump. It feels like running for president is a new buying a yacht for rich people. If I have enough money, I might as well do it. But we want to talk about it and get a sense of the feel. What do we do if we can't find a candidate who is likable enough? How do we separate the real contenders from the distractors? And how do we avoid what I call PRF, presidential race fatigue? Because we're 500 days away from voting. Joining me in the studio is Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent for Maryland Public Television. Welcome back.
Thank
Richard
you.
Vatz, professor of rhetoric and communication at Towson University. He does have an article that came out last Thursday about Rand Paul, and we're going to link to it on our website. So let's jump right into it. And if you want to join us, 410-319-8888. Charles, let's start with you.
Well, first and foremost, I've had an opportunity to see at least two of the potential candidates. I was invited to a sit-down interview with Dr. Ben Carson right after the riots, and that was a very interesting conversation with some both mostly religious leaders and some community folk. And the questions were quite poignant, and obviously the riots had just occurred, so he was answering that. The other one, obviously, was Martin O'Malley's kickoff campaign in Baltimore, where, that also was shadowed by the riots.
Yes.
And those two candidates who have those Maryland roots I don't want to say a unique perspective, but have a different perspective from those who are running in Iowa. And I'll say it like that because, it's difficult. Look, if you've never been to Iowa, it's farms. It's not an urban environment. You're not going to get a lot of racial diversity. And it's a caucus state. And Professor Vatz will probably agree with me. This is the biggest wild card of all of the political races, because it means, can you get your people to a caucus? Can you get them organized enough so that they can vote for you? And then, of course, if I remember correctly, you go through five rounds of voting, minimum
There's
of five
the fatigue.
Rounds.
Richard, what do you think? So is the field wide open, as some people are saying, because Jeb Bush is not intimidating anyone, or is it really just the same idea of passing power among the same families?
Well, boy, there are an awful lot of people on the Republican side, and And I like a couple of them, and I don't like most of them. if any of your listeners want to read my article, you'll see why I am not rooting for Rand Paul.
I love that point. You say he's not sexist, but he shouldn't be president.
Right. And I really think that Jeb Bush, I think he wears well. Okay. I think he had a very successful governorship in Florida. I think that he's a good man. I think that he's much more articulate than his brother. I think he's a solid conservative and not a crazy conservative.
Is there a difference? Oh, no. Go ahead.
Yes, there is, most definitely. I'd even say there's a difference between solid Democrats and crazy Democrats. Ben Carson. I was on a panel with Ben Carson, and I found him personally most likable. But anybody who supports a flat tax or supports or opposes abortion, I think is not going to be president of the United States. And also, to have no experience in politics whatsoever.
It's a big job.
That's right.
It's a big job.
And it's not a good job to learn while you're doing it.
That's right.
You need to have some idea of what's
now,
going to
there,
happen.
Now, early in the races, there are solid supports of, say, 8 to 10% for almost everybody.
Right.
And there is also for Ben Carson. But I don't think that he's going to expand that kind of support. I'd be happy to go over the other candidates too, but I really think it's going to be either Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush.
Well, let's dig down a little bit with Jeb Bush, because at this moment, more than 25 million Latinos are currently eligible to vote, and their role will be crucial. And to kind of place this in context, in 2012, Obama won 70% of the Hispanic vote. And so this idea, if you're going to win in 2016, you do need to look at capturing this vote. Jeb Bush, who speaks fluent Spanish, in fact, he switched to Spanish about 27 minutes into his speech. He learned the language at the age of 17, lived in Mexico. He said he married a Mexican woman. They speak Spanish to each other. They speak Spanish to their kids. He has completely embraced the Hispanic culture. But does he have what it takes to politically capture the vote across the board?
Let me just say, does he have the capacity to win a Republican nomination?
Yeah, that's
issue. That's the bigger
issue.
Issue. Yeah. And you look, I think most people would agree. All candidates will move to the middle after you get out of the nomination process, because you have to.
You got
to
be in the middle to kind
you,
of win.
You
got to
kind of find where that is. The more interesting part about this race, I think, is the ability to not just energize your voters, but to bring new voters to the process. Because if you can't do that, you know, look, I don't think it's any secret that, you know, the Republican Party skews older white men.
Right.
And that's not a big mystery. You know, we know that, you know, the coalition that Obama brought to bear on the electoral process is out there, but it is not being seized by anyone on the Democratic side. And I you know, I've tried to take the pulse of, you know, how are you going to sow those desperate parties that got Obama over the top to make it work? Now, the political map actually, I think, favors Democrats at this time. And I always remind, you got to look at a slice of time.
Right, okay.
And not necessarily you know, where we're going to be in November of 2016. But the other thing is, I always remind folks, whatever we're talking about now will not have a hill of beans to do with how people vote on Election Day. And 80% of what I've seen over the number of years that I've covered elections, pocketbook issues drive a lot of what's going on.
Okay.
If people feel good about where they are financially, you know, That has a tendency to favor, I think, the Republican Party. Whereas those folks who feel like they're out of power, that has a tendency to favor Democrats. But right now, I think we're in this unique flux. The stock market is up, and if you got money in a stock market, you're doing pretty well. But if you're on the ground and you're at the lower economic scale, and I think that's part of maybe what drove some of the uprising, is that, you know, life is not well. And when I say not well, I mean it's piss poor. You can't find a job.
Can you say that on the air?
Yes, you can say that.
I didn't
on
know
the
that.
Air.
I mean, he just did. He just did.
I mean, you feel like it's raining yellow on you.
Goodness, okay, so now gracious. What? Now we have definitely stepped into it. But this is how people are feeling.
Charles,
so we're
and I
talking
have different
about
styles
you do,
speaking.
And I love the different styles. It keeps it very interesting for me. Piss poor on one side, you know, evil, and like the death penalty on the other side. It's a great day to be in the middle. So let's talk about Hillary. Because when you talk about, you know, perhaps this looming figure, Hillary seems to be this looming figure. But we saw the shakeup. I mean, with Obama, people were talking about Hillary, and then in comes Barack Obama and shifts the conversation. Can Hillary really go the long haul? Are people getting Hillary fatigued at this point?
I think that Hillary Clinton is going to win the Democratic nomination by a landslide, and I think she's going to lose the presidential election, if I had to guess, by about 4 to 6 points.
I'm going to write that down.
All right.
I mean, if we're making predictions like that with actual numbers, mind
actual
you.
Actual numbers. I was hoping everybody would forget it by the time we had an election.
But it seems like she's also trying to distance herself. I mean, if we think about it for a second.
From whom?
Well, so you know, when Jeb came in the race, he did not have Bush on his logo. It's just Jeb with an exclamation point.
Yeah.
I love it in Spanish because the exclamation point
that's
is in the beginning.
That's always been his.
But Hillary is also kind of critiquing Bill. Like, can you really separate the Clintons who are like a tree root branch entangled in one another? How can she distance herself from this looming umbrella called Bill?
Well, she distanced herself when they walked out of the White House after the Monica Lewinsky affair. But you don't mean that literally.
I don't mean that literally.
Okay.
Because even then, she kind of floated back after.
I think that Hillary Clinton has so many liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
I think this email business, where she has emails on her private server that she doesn't. She didn't want to discuss anything. And I have to say parenthetically that. Hillary benefits from the liberal mainstream media that tend to give her an easy run.
Wow,
I mean, even those of you who are liberals must admit that if a Republican refused to talk to the media the way Hillary has refused to answer questions, that Republican would be skewered. So I think that – but you can't do that for an entire election. You can't do that for – you certainly can't do that for the general election. And I think that – I think the email issue is going to hurt her. I think the Benghazi issue is going to hurt her. I think that the issue of Bill Clinton, who's very popular for some reason, but
still,
very popular,
yes.
Among – and I think he's very popular among Democrats in particular. I think what you have is an individual – whose negatives are so high that she can't win the presidential election. Since Richard Nixon, even with Richard Nixon, I don't think you've ever had an individual win a presidential election with negatives as high as Hillary's.
Well, let's talk about Bernie Sanders. Let's keep going here. Now, the Observer notes that although people really like him, odds of him toppling Hillary, let alone winning the Democratic primary alone. They said he breaks all the laws of American politics. He calls himself a socialist. That he's not outwardly charming, according to some people. He goes on and on about the dying middle class and the oligarchies breaking democracy. Can he really shake this thing up? Maybe not win it, but at least shake it up so Hillary's not the de facto choice.
I'm going to kind of weigh in on this Bernie Sanders thing. You know, as we like to call it, he's the Baskin-Robbins flavor of the month. and that's the easiest way to describe him, because there's obviously a segment of the Democratic base that's looking for an alternative to Hillary. At one point, a lot of people had suggested that was Martin O'Malley. O'Malley is stained by his, you know, zero tolerance. But, you know, once again, remind yourself, they got to win in places where urban issues aren't going to be a big thing, okay? You know, both New Hampshire and Iowa.
You really don't like Iowa.
No, I like Iowa. I'm just trying to – because people may not understand that, you know, when you go to Des Moines, it's an urban city, but –
but it's really not.
It's Oklahoma City, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I mean, it's a major city, but it's not a cosmopolitan hub. And if you get to go to Cedar Rapids, man, if you don't like buffalo meat, nobody's going to like you. and part of that is that they must appeal to these unique constituencies by sometimes offering more than they can. But with Sanders, I find it very curious that, you know, we all love the underdog.
Right.
You know, I'm reminded of, you remember John Anderson?
Yeah.
Okay,
John Anderson was, you know, the quintessential underdog who won a little bit, not much, but all of a sudden, well, he's the guy to topple somebody. Well, I hate to tell you, only people like Vats and myself know who John Anderson is. And that's part of our, if you will, our media cycle of, can we find somebody else?
That need to want to have somebody else.
To find that alternative. Yes. And last but not least, you know, one of the things that the Obama administration did well and better than anybody is mining metadata. Because I asked this question when I was in Denver. You know, when Obama was going around the country and doing all the rallies, at the end of the rallies, they said, make sure you send send your text message to this number so we can keep you up to date. So I asked a simple question. How many people you got in that database?
Yeah.
And everybody goes, what do you mean? I was like, well, you know, you got some text numbers. How many? And the other deep part of that was that the company that they were using, I think it was T-Mobile at the time, T-Mobile was getting like $1 a pop off of each one of them, which meant what? That
easily,
was big money.
Easily.
That was money.
Dollars, yes.
And guess what? They still own that database. Now, one of the things they did very cleverly last go around was they utilized celebrity to make things intimate.
Right.
So, you know, my wife, who is a Democrat and who she had donated some money to the campaign. She got an email that started off with, how would you like to have dinner with George Clooney? Now, my wife is like, heck yeah, let's do
this. Absolutely.
I think they also did Sarah Jessica Parker, and I think they did Michelle Obama.
Yes.
And you went into a pool, but they asked for another $50.
If you wanted to go into the pool. My mom got the same email. She was so excited.
Well, let me just tell you that database exists. And the question was, who owns that database?
And what are they doing with it?
No, they know what they're going to do with it.
We don't know.
But we don't know.
Right, we don't know.
And every time you ask them about that question, they get very nervous. They don't want to give you numbers. And trust me, I'm at the hub of where the DNC is sitting there. I said, I know somebody here knows this.
And they're not going to give you the information.
But let me suggest this. I was at a rally at the University of Maryland College Park. I asked a simple question. How much does the space hold? 17K. Mm. Okay. So let's just do the simple math, as I like to say. Let's say 50% of them. So that's what? At least 8K.
Yes.
Of what? Direct numbers.
Direct numbers.
To talk to people.
Absolutely.
And guess what? They could care less about social media. They could care less about television ads. Because what they're doing with that data is they are also categorizing it by, if someone said, I want to talk to all the black females, I want to talk to all the white females.
Pull the information out.
Right. This is that data mining.
It's that metadata.
That's out there. And guess what? You give up your right to say, because remember how they told you who the vice president was going to be? They sent you a text message.
Yes.
And I didn't sign up because I didn't want to know. But of course I was going to find out.
Right.
But that's the problem that the GOP has. It doesn't have that ability to say, I want to find all the Republican Hispanics under the age of 25. That if I ask
but
that
they
question,
will. But they will have that ability.
They haven't. They fired like two companies that were trying to do it.
But they will.
They will. They're going to catch up. But I do want to keep going because I want to get to some others.
I didn't mean to take it.
I want you to, as you're talking about it, Richard, I also want you to talk about Donald Trump. Like I want to get to some of the other candidates. He did a 45-minute kickoff speech. In the speech, he portrayed immigrants from Mexico as bringing drugs and crimes, being rapists, and that some of them are good people. It was like an SNL skit, but it was real for him. So we want to talk about some of the other candidates. So respond to Charles, but also talk about Don.
Donald Trump, who claims to have $8-something billion.
Yeah, he said money's not an option.
Money's not an option. And, you know, everything he says turns off all those but the tiny percentage who are intensely support of Donald Trump. And I one thing I predicted well that I can't prove I predicted, but I predicted well is I thought as soon as Donald Trump got in, Dana Milbank of the Washington Post would absolutely skewer him, and that's exactly what happened.
That happened.
And he went through a content analysis of his speeches, and he uses the word I and is self-referential in everything he says. I mean, Donald Trump is an exciting guy who doesn't really win support except from the 10% or so that the
eight. I wouldn't give him 10.
Right.
I was like,
it might go up to 10. One guy, by the way, that I left out that I shouldn't have left out, Governor John Kasich of Ohio. I mean, he's a governor. You know, there used to be a conventional wisdom before the Obama era that you had to have a governor for his managerial talents as president. And so John Kasich is kind of a I think he's a centrist. I think he's a good man. He's a governor of Ohio. He's done very well there. I think he could be a candidate. Now, there's another Democratic candidate, Lincoln Chafee. Rhode Island, I believe. Mm-hmm. And he wants to go back to the metric system. And I was thinking when he came out with that, what kind of a roar do you get from a crowd?
What a metric system. Very exciting for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You can almost yell out to a crowd that's there to support you, raise ipsiloquiter, and they'll go crazy. But when you say metric system, you know, I'd like to see how crowds react to that when he comes out. And that's his main calling card for wanting to become president. I don't think Republicans like him, which he was one. I don't think Democrats like him. I don't think he has a chance for anything. But Hillary needs this kind of opposition that isn't really material opposition. And I think it actually helps her, although it makes her go a little bit to the left. And you're quite right. She'll have to come back to the center more for an election. And she can claim that the Bill Clinton presidency was a centrist presidency. And I want to hear, though, how she's going to deal with the issues that I mentioned and also how she's going to deal with the ISIS issues and, you know, what's she going to do about the foreign policy that Barack Obama has not directed. You know, I want to hear those things.
Well, let's kind of pull all the candidates in here, and we want to go through them the last little time we have left. But we want to throw out a name, and I need you to tell me viable or not. What's their punchline? Are they likable? Research says that people tend to talk about how they want to vote for a person they want to have a beer with or have salsa with or have a party with, and they end up voting for a person they think they can trust. So let's just throw the names out there. Marco Rubio.
I like him.
Great
very much.
Vice president.
Yeah. I think. Well, I think at that
great
point,
vice president.
That might be, but I also think that aside of the fact that the Wall Street Journal had a criticism of him today with respect to his child care tax, I think he'd be a good man. I think his sophistication in foreign policy has grown in the last few years. I think he's become an adult in his rhetoric in the last 2 years. He's no longer looking for his water, when he speaks.
Which is very important to him.
I've forgotten all about that.
They're looking for the water. Rand Paul, what do you think?
Rand Paul probably may end up running as an independent.
Mm. Rand Paul, you did a piece on him.
Yeah, I did a piece on him. I think he's awful. I think his foreign policy changes with the wind. I think his father was an isolationist. I think he has a lot of isolationism in him. I think his fight with Savannah Guthrie was really tasteless. I'm not a Savannah Guthrie supporter, but she didn't say anything.
Though.
She didn't say anything that warranted his hostility. I think he's been in the Senate just 2 or 3 years. I'm not a Rand Paul supporter much at all.
Not on Rand Paul. How about Rick Perry?
Wait a minute. What's that other government agency that I want to get rid of? And I hate to tell you, that is embedded in the American psyche.
But substantively, why should that have any effect on a vote? Mm. The fact that he couldn't come up with the agency in a debate.
I think right. Professor Vatz, that speaks to the ability of, you know, we want our presidents to have I don't want to say they have to be smart, but they need to be competent.
That's a big one.
They need to be competent.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't think many people would suggest that George Bush was the smartest crayon in the box.
Not at all.
And he's often suggested that when, you know, I got a C when I came out of Yale, and that means that all the C students can become president.
He actually used that in a graduation speech.
Right. You know? And I think that speaks to, you know, Perry's so-called Texas miracle is built on a premise that oil is good, mm-hmm. and it will be good forever.
I think that.
But I don't think he'll get the nomination.
I don't either. I think his gaffe, where it's not substantive, I think it will hurt him too. I agree with you on that. And I think he's off-putting to an awful lot of people who are just a little bit to the left of him and beyond. I think personally he's not a viable candidate.
Well, let's talk about some of the females. How about Lindsey Graham?
Lindsey Graham is not a female.
He's a man.
Oh, my word.
Look, let me just correct the record here. Lindsey Graham is a senator, U.S. senator from South Carolina.
I know for a fact Lindsey Graham is not. I'm looking down, trying to catch all my notes. Go get the females. Not Lindsey Graham.
Let's talk about Lindsey Graham. My son-in-law was one of his top aides until 2 years ago.
So you're supporting him?
Well, I like Lindsey Graham a lot. Yes, I like him a lot.
Do you think he could?
There are only two questions. Should a person be president? Can a person get the nomination? I don't think he can get the nomination. I wouldn't be uncomfortable at all with him being nominated.
I think his support is regional at best. It's probably more statewide than it is regional.
Okay, well, let's bring it back to Maryland. Now, I'm almost certain, I gaffed on the Lindsey Graham, but I'm almost certain these people are from Maryland. So Martin O'Malley.
You know what? I'm going to give you one of these bizarre conversations that I had with an operative. Charles, we're waiting in the wings.
Ooh.
We think we can beat him. Beat who? I was like, well, we think we can beat whoever it is because we have a record to run on. I hate to tell him that bubble just burst with the riots.
Well, you may be right. I think that may be the answer. But before they occurred, I actually thought that Martin O'Malley could sneak in because I thought that it's possible
you thought
Hillary.
He could sneak in?
Yeah.
Well, I thought that Hillary would plummet. I also thought Martin O'Malley could possibly be a vice presidential nomination. But the fact that he's in the fight and he may be the most viable individual in the fight. All along, might earn him a vice presidential nod.
Really?
And I don't think even the presidential nod is impossible. I think it's unlikely.
Okay.
Very unlikely, but not impossible.
And also say he wins if he loses.
Okay. Well, for what he wants to do beyond that.
No.
He wins
if he loses.
He's also, let me just say something. The O'Malley haters, every time somebody hates a politician, they say, yeah, he's stupid. O'Malley is really smart and he's really articulate. And I think that he has a lot of political talent that people don't recognize.
Well, excellent. We're going to leave it there.
Can I add one more person?
Very, very quickly.
Scott Walker is the guy you want to watch.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's not in the race yet.
Yeah,
okay. So we will take a look at that. But we do have to wrap. We're going to continue with follow the presidential race. We'll look at Scott Walker. We'll make sure we understand that Lindsey Graham is a male, not a female. We'll figure out who's from Maryland. We have a long road ahead of us. Thank you so much, Charles Robinson, political and business correspondent from Maryland Public Television, Dr. Richard Batts, professor of rhetoric and communication at Towson University. We will link to your
author. Author of the only authentic book of persuasion.
I knew you were going to say it, so I was pointing to you to go with it because you say it the correct way. But we will link to your article
off
of our website.
Appreciate
After the break, Mark Steiner is back with a new episode of our weekly look at food and our environment here on the Mark Steiner Show, Soundbites. We discuss a new report that found that 1 in 4 Baltimore City residents and nearly 1 in 3 children live in food deserts. And we continue our discussion on veganism and animals in light of New Zealand passing a law that legally recognizes animals like humans as sentient beings. On our way to break, we're hearing Pretty Eyes by Horace Silver, who passed away on this day last year in 2014. And this is Dr. K.Y.'s Whitehead hijacking the chair from Mark Steiner. I'm going to get it together next time. Remember, power never concedes anything without a struggle. Until then, have a great day.